all of his crew, have been working with us over the last 2.5 years. We recently had some electrical damage in the building, which took down the entire network. And they were in helping us the next day. It was a real, real pleasure working with them. It helped us out a ton. Here at Vermont College, we're a small operation. Our IT department, we only have 2 people. So it's often hard sometimes to find the right bit of knowledge that we might need. So I have actually called Ruben before and spoke with them about, you know, things that I'm trying to do, things that I'm trying to accomplish. And they've been very helpful in guiding us along the way. Friendly, courteous, knowledgeable are the first 3 words that come to my head when I think about Ruben and everyone there. And they're a great, great crew.
RB Technologies cares about their customers. Call them at 223-4448 or online at rbtechvt.com. RB Technologies, efficiency through technology.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Condon. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. It is Friday. That means we're here at the State House in Montpelier. By the way, congratulations, everybody, making it to Friday. Coming up on the program today, we're going to really dive deep into reaction to Governor Shumlin's budget address, which he gave yesterday, outlining his proposals to raise money and cut spending to close a budget gap of more than $90 million. So we'll get some reaction to that. And, of course, we'll take your phone calls as well. Here's the lineup for you. Governor Shumlin's going to join us coming up here just momentarily. And later this hour, we'll talk with Senator Richard Sears. He's a member of the Senate Appropriations Committee. He's also chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee. We'll talk a little bit of guns with him as well, too. There's a fairly controversial proposal on that floating around the building, too. Next hour, we will be joined by Senator Kevin Mullen. He's a Republican from Rutland County. And also, I'll share with you some other comments that the Speaker of the House, Shap Smith, I spoke with him earlier this morning, so I'll share with him, share with you some of his comments as well. Our phone numbers on the program, love to hear from you. You can reach us at 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. You can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. All right, some of the areas that we'll get into with the governor. He, on the issue of closing the budget gap here, some $30 million in cuts to the Agency of Human Services. We'll find out what some of the details were on that. Because frankly, yesterday, there was not an enormous amount of detail in the actual speech. Some of the accompanying documents to get into a little bit more, detail. Also, there is, this proposal that he has, which will raise about $15 million. By taking away a loophole that some Vermont taxpayers have been enjoying, which allows you to deduct your previous year's state and local property taxes from your current tax bill. Also, the biggie, I think, really, one that may dominate a lot of discussion here at the State House over the next couple of weeks, this proposal that he laid out to institute a payroll tax, and this would be used to try to raise money, which would then be used to pay doctors and hospitals more money for the services of people who are on Medicaid. The theory here, and I spoke with the House Speaker here this morning about it, the theory is that this would be basically an offset. The businesses would be paying more in, but we'd be getting a benefit back out because they would not have to be responsible for picking up the share of the cost shift that happens when under private employers versus those in the Medicaid system. So that's the theory here. One of the things that I want to get into with the governor is, and that I spoke with the speaker about it this morning too, is, you know, how businesses can be confident that they'll actually see that savings on the other end of this equation. So we'll chat about that. Also, when it comes to education spending, education funding, Governor very clear yesterday that he thinks that the state has a spending problem, and but did not really he didn't recommend any sort of radical change here in the funding formula. No, you know, overhaul of Act 60, Act 68, or throwing that out or anything like that. Really wants to get back down into the local school systems with what he describes as a partnership between the state and the local community. So we'll get into the education issues as well, too. And we're going to do that right now. Let's give a nice warm radio Vermont welcome this morning to Governor Shumlin. Oh, so you got the cred too, huh?
Hey, it's great to be here. Great to be on.
Yep.
And I'm still breathing.
Okay. Hey, let's begin. I was just actually talking about this payroll tax proposal that you laid out yesterday. This would be used to try to get at this Medicaid cost shift, which you say businesses are already paying. A new tax. You really want this as part of the Shumlin legacy?
I want to fix the healthcare system in Vermont as part of the Shumlin legacy, and we can't do it if we don't do this. Listen, this is pretty, this isn't complicated stuff if you just boil it down. Right now, we are putting our primary care providers, our doctors, particularly in rural communities, out of business. They get paid 40 cents, 50 cents, 60 cents for a dollar's work. I mean, every business person knows you just can't survive if that goes on long enough. What's that mean? It means two things. The only way that they can stay in business is to do one of two choices. First, to either stop taking patients who need care, which means that low-income Vermonters can't get the doc care, the primary care they need to stay healthy. Or the other possibility is go out of business. There really isn't a third choice. So for years, you've heard politicians pay lip service to this. Republicans, Democrats, legislators in this building. Bottom line is, I've come up with a solution. And what it does is, you know, we can call it a tax if we wish. It is a tax. But the thing about this particular assessment is, or tax, if you do a small payroll tax, 0.7%, for those who are currently buying insurance for their employees, which is the majority of our business folks, they're going to get that money back for the simple reason that right now what happens is when the provider gets underpaid, that's got to be paid by somebody. It gets paid by all the private insurance folks, small business, big business who are buying insurance. It gets shifted to them. So when Al Gobain and the Green Mountain Healthcare Board do a great job of holding down medical costs, as they've done for the last 2 years, the lowest in 40 years, both for two consecutive years, insurance rates still go up for business. So it's called the cost shift. If we do this, every dollar we pull in payroll tax draws down $1.10 of federal money.
Right.
And it will, Al Gobain, the Green Mountain Healthcare Board, and Blue Cross Blue Shield, and our hospitals will work with our payers to get that money back to them in what would have been premium increases. So, you know, really, it goes like this. If you could pay $100 million to get back $400 million, which is how this will originally work, would you put your money in? The answer is yes.
What's the mechanism that will give businesses confidence that they'll see this savings on the other end?
Our regulatory system, and it's going to be right in statute. First of all, this money's not going into the general fund. It's going into the health care fund. We're going to put right in statute that our regulators have to work with our providers. And frankly, the hospitals, Blue Cross Blue Shield, and Green Mountain Healthcare Board all want to make this work.
You're a business guy. A new tax, even if it starts small, one of the concerns I heard yesterday, you start a new tax and it's just going to grow and up another 0.5% in a couple of years, another percent here and there, and next thing you know, you're up into some significant numbers.
You know, if you look at the history of the lottery as an example, we began a lottery to help fund education in Vermont, and it's remained a fund that funds education. I think that if this legislature and the healthcare community, business community, is committed to fixing this problem and drawing down $1.10 for every dollar we put in to fix a problem that's killing our healthcare system, we can use that money for that purpose. It will remain to get dedicated to that purpose. And, you know, I think legislators listen. And if every, you know, we've got many people in the business community right now who support this proposal. If ever it was used for other purposes, I think you'd see the business committee roll in here in their cars and trucks and say, hey, you know, this is not what you had promised us. So I think that, you know, we have a responsive democracy. We can't fear making absolutely necessary change because of what might happen in the future. We've got to do the right thing for a healthcare system and for businesses and for job growth right now. And the big point is this. Every single one of my proposals is dedicated to what I heard from voters in this election. What's the issue? Tremendous frustration in the middle class that they're working hard, they're playing by the rules, they can't pay their bills, the bills are coming in faster than their incomes are going up. And the second is low-income Vermonters who are hurting more than they were before the recession. So if we're going to go after the real cost drivers that are holding back income growth, I can tell you what they are. Healthcare costs that go up faster than our incomes and property taxes that are going up faster than our incomes. I laid out proposals for both.
Why not go big and bold and do 2-3%, solve the whole Medicaid shift?
I think that we've made the necessary steps to literally take Medicaid to Medicare, and that's where we should start. It makes good common sense, and I think it'll really help us. The part that I didn't say yesterday, because I spoke too long already, to be honest, is that...
Really? Did you think you spoke too long yesterday?
It was a long speech. You know, I don't like listening to a speech that's over an hour and 5 minutes, and I don't particularly like giving a speech that's over an hour, but, you know, we had a lot to say. My point is... What I didn't say was that in order to move to a new way of paying our healthcare providers, where we move from quantity to quality, fee for service to outcomes, we will never get our federal waiver for an all-payer waiver approved if we don't fix our Medicaid shift. We just won't. So there's two reasons to do this. One is the right thing for Vermonters. It's the right thing for our healthcare providers. It's the right thing for our hospitals and docs. But it's also the right thing for moving to a much smarter way to spend our money for better outcomes.
Let's talk about education. No big new recommendation for a funding, new big fat funding formula. How come?
Well, you know, I've said this before, but I don't think our problem is the pockets that we're asking to take money out of to pay for education in Vermont. Our problem is we're spending too much money for quality outcomes that aren't good enough.
Okay. So what does that mean?
So, you know, I put forward a number of proposals, 7 proposals, that I make changes to the formula that will help us to find a way to correct the problem we have. What's the problem? We've lost, you know, we've moved from 112,000 students. We're now down to 78,000. So tens of thousands of students. All the projections suggest that that's going to continue to happen. We now have the highest per pupil spending rates in the nation. We are down to 4.7-1 in terms of staff to student ratio.
I was stunned by this number. You had 20% of elementary school classrooms have between 2 and 9 students.
I mean, that's the hidden secret, what we don't talk about. And my point is, not only is it killing Vermonters in terms of paying property taxes, but the bigger problem is it's destroying quality. Those kids' futures are being compromised because when a school gets that small, when you have 2 or 3 kids in your class, you're unable to offer the options and choices that are required for a kid to get the education they need to meet 21st century jobs in Vermont. So it's not just a money issue. This is really, at this point, compromising our most important obligation in Vermont, which is to educate our kids in a system that works for them. So what do we do about it? What I proposed is a number of changes in the formula that take away the crazy incentives we have now that feed this problem. We give more money to small schools than we do big schools. Well, we know that's not working for us. We have this phantom student in the formula where we literally fund students that don't exist. I mean, come on, let's fix these things. I recommended that we get rid of the ability of teachers to strike and of school board members to impose contracts on our teachers. I recommend that we change the structure so that principals hire staff, and we have one central place, superintendencies, for most bulk purchasing. But the biggest recommendation I made is this, and you know, we can poke holes in any of these ideas, but I personally think this will work. Every time that Montpelier tries to pass a cookie-cutter, one-size-fits-all consolidation or restructuring governance plan, they run into the stark reality that every community in Vermont is different. Every community has a unique solution to their challenges that we're facing in both quality and size. So what I suggested is, let's partner with these communities. We're doing that right now. Give the communities the data they need to see not only what their property taxes are now, but what's going to happen 5 years, 10 years from now. Because I got to tell you, Mark, when you see those numbers in many of our rural communities in Vermont, your eyes will pop right out.
Well, you used that term eye-popping yesterday. What would it look like without anything being done?
We can show you community by community. My Secretary Holcomb has those numbers. But literally, you'll see in many small rural communities, if we don't change, if we don't have the courage to change, the property taxes now look like a bargain basement sale at Macy's after the holidays. They really do. It's going to be just, you know, they double in some communities. So my point is, give communities the data. Vermonters make the right decisions when they get the data. partner with them with the incentives I've laid out, consolidation. We're going to give them money to, you know, help them improve the schools that they're moving into and do the other things. And then in the take our assessment system, which we approved last year, which is much like what independent schools do, which is a group of teachers, peers from neighboring schools come in, see how you're doing with quality, what you're doing well, what you're not doing well, how you're doing with cost, what you're doing well, what you're not doing well, what the data says, not emotion, but data about how you're doing with each kid in the school, and then give the recommendations to the school and the school board and the community. Give them time to make the changes. If inevitably they don't, I'm saying give either the State Board of Education or the secretary the authority to say, in the instances where necessary, you must close this school, you must consolidate this district.
Okay, so where's the partnership in that? When I think of a partnership, I think of give and take. This sounds a lot like there's a lot of you taking and not a lot of giving, and almost sort of a relationship that if you don't do X, you threaten Y.
Vermonters are fed up. They want change. What I'm proposing is a system where we all work together to do the right thing, but someone's got to have a hammer.
So ultimately, if you don't do it the way the state wants it being done, your school gets closed down.
Yeah, I think that's an oversimplification, and it's easy to oversimplify. Listen, I can tell you without getting specific about schools, about communities right now where they know that their high school or their elementary school isn't meeting the needs of kids and is costing them a ton of money. You have communities divided about whether to close them or whether to keep them open. I'm saying let's enter into the partnership, have the conversation, show them the data going forward, give them incentives they need, change the formula so that we're not artificially keeping them alive, which we are now with small school grants and phantom students, all the rest in the formula. I say that if we do all that, in 99% of the cases, it will be a partnership that ends in good outcomes, good decisions for the community.
How will eliminating the ability to strike, eliminating on the other end the ability of school boards to impose a contract, how is that going to save taxpayers money?
It won't save money, but it will save kids, because the people who suffer in strikes are our kids every single time.
You think that proposal has any sort of chance of getting support from the teachers union and then this building?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, in fairness to the teachers union, they have historically supported this one. It's the school boards and the superintendents that have objected to it. So it's an interesting dynamic. My point is, I don't have all the answers, but this is what I do know. Vermonters are fed up. They understand that that property taxes are going up higher than they can afford, and they're just going to keep going up if we continue business as usual. Second, they know that in many cases, or too many cases, with all the money that we're spending, we're not getting the quality results that we should. You know, the scariest part of all this, Mark, is that we have the highest per pupil spending rate in the country, and we're one of the lowest in terms of moving kids, particularly low-income kids or first-generation kids, beyond high school. And in this workforce, if you don't have a degree, some training beyond high school, I hate to say it, but it's not like when I was a kid growing up in Vermont, where you can make a good living with a high school degree. You are sentencing yourself to a low-wage job for life, most likely. So, you know, that's what we're up against. So what I'm saying is, if my ideas don't work, give us yours. I'm asking for an environment where, unlike what typically happens in this building, we roll up our sleeves, we listen to each other, we put forth bold ideas, as I believe I've done, and let's really vet them together in an objective way. Take those that work, throw out those that don't, but if we don't make change, Vermonters will ask for drastic change that will hurt kids, hurt schools, and not be constructive.
Talking with Governor Peter Shumlin, 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free, 877-291-8255. Coming up later on this hour, we'll talk with Senator Dick Sears. Let's go to the phone. Pete and Barry. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Governor.
Hey, Pete.
I'm going to go back in the conversation a little bit to ask a question about health care reform.
Yep.
And my question has to do with costs of hospitals that provide services in Vermont, posting what their costs for procedures are. Right now, you know, as a consumer and you wouldn't go out and buy a car, piece of property, or anything like that without knowing what the costs are first. Is there any proposal in the works regarding health care reform, and and requiring that hospitals do such a thing. I'll get off the air and get off the phone and wait for the answer on the air.
Gosh, my recollection is they're doing that to some degree already.
Yeah, Pete, they're moving in that direction, and not as fast as I wish or anyone wishes, but you make a good point. I mean, the problem with the healthcare system is it doesn't work like the free market. You can't, you know, in other words, as a business person, I can tell you it doesn't work like a business. You can't call up right now and say, hey, how much for a knee, how much for a shoulder? The other problem is that, frankly, most people have no incentive to shop. I mean, if you've got your insurance covered by your employer, well, what do you care? The insurance company ends up paying. That's why it's so critical that we move to a new way of paying healthcare providers where they get paid for outcomes for keeping us healthy instead of the current system that really promotes utilization. It promotes us using more healthcare than we need to stay healthy. And, you know, the statistics bear this out. I mean, we in Vermont and the United States spend times what other countries around us spend, developed countries, and they live longer, they have lower infant mortality, they have better outcomes. So it's not even working for us in terms of, it's not like when we spend lots of money, we live longer, we're healthier than all those around us. So I really believe that our all-payer waiver will move us to a system that provides the incentives for hospitals, docs, all the people that take care of us, that will change the current system where we don't care what it costs.
Let's go to Rutland. Ben, good morning.
Ben? Good morning. How are you?
Good, good, good. Go ahead, Beth.
Okay. Part of this is in jest, but it's partly serious. I was just wondering if the governor has sick days.
I could use one today. Mark's
okay.
Going, God, don't get too close.
I just wanted
to
point out that we can have all kinds of health care, but it helps if you have a sick day to stay home and enjoy your sickness. Not really, but just to stay home. The other thing, this is I know it's a very small thing, but a couple of years ago I had a procedure done at a local hospital. And after the procedure, you go out into the waiting room, and they want you to sit for like 15 minutes just to make sure you've got your sea legs back. And I'm sitting there, and one of the nurses comes over to me with this envelope, and she said, this is for you. And it had my name written on the front, and inside was a thank you card with the names of all of the staff. And it was a nice gesture, but I thought, this is what they're spending their money on, thank you cards? That's all I have to say.
Okay. All right.
Well, thanks for calling in, Beth.
You don't write thank you cards anymore either.
I send a lot of thank you cards.
Money.
I really do. But I got to say that
sick days. What about the sick days?
Sick days. There's going to be a good discussion of 6 days in this building this session. It's not an easy one for the obvious reason that there's not consensus on. Really, the tension on sick days isn't that employers think that they should make their employees go to work sick. It's that employers want to have the control over who makes that decision. I think that's really the debate. And I think we can find ways. I'm going to try to bring the parties together to come up with something logical.
Cuts the AHS roughly $25 million plus. Where is that going to be felt the most?
Well, we've tried to do the cuts in a way that doesn't harm people who depend upon us.
And it's $25 million. That's a lot of money.
You're going to see it, no question about it. But we really have put together a thoughtful budget proposal that tries to find, we get $15 million of it through efficiencies. Now, they're not easy choices. People are going to complain and holler, but looking at government and saying, how do we make this system more efficient? And you can poke holes in every one of them for sure, but we got to do it. It's $94 million. You got to get there. And then we make some cuts that, you know, we don't particularly like, but we think of the choices we've made, we've protected the folks that are most vulnerable.
Streamlining, consolidating programs, gosh, it sounds like another challenge is for change.
Well, the difference is that we're actually putting forth proposals that actually change things. I mean, you know, it's not, again, not happy stuff, but As an example, are consolidating dispatching among public safety. Now, that's going to save $1.6 million. Now, can you make an argument for, you know, jobs and all that? Of course you can. But we believe that we can protect the public by having a consolidated public safety dispatch system. There are other examples of similar kinds of choices where you're saying, you know, technology and other things have allowed us to do things more efficiently and differently. Change is always harder than the status quo.
Let's go to Moortown. Bill, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mark. Good morning, Governor. I was really astonished the other day. I was up in the Northeast Kingdom, and I'm well known in that area, and I stopped in to see my niece. And her daughter, she took her out of the Sutton School. I'm sure you're aware of what the problem was there. And put her in a private school in Lindenville. I won't mention the name of it. That young lady has excelled probably further in the eighth grade than the normal junior in high school. And I think somebody needs to take a long, hard look at this. And there's no reason in this world, with the taxes that we pay in our school taxes, state of Vermont, get these people off their laurels in our public schools and get them to excel, these students. Look at these other countries.
All right. Well, thank you, Bill.
Bill, you know, that's exactly the conversation that I think my plan will promote in Vermont, is community by community, since we know that what might be right for Putney and Dummerston might not work for Sutton and communities around Sutton. But really the question is, how do we look at, take out the emotion? Because so much emotion stands in our way of change when it comes to schools. You know, we go back to, as a kid who was born and raised in the state, you know, we go back to the school that we used to beat in football, and the school we used to beat in baseball, and we have all these rivalries and walls built up. And what I'm saying is, let's look at what we're doing, face the fact that we can't keep doing what we're doing, either for the quality outcomes of your granddaughter or for taxpayers, and say, how do we collectively, community by community, form partnerships that make more sense, particularly for small rural communities? Because this is what's going to happen. Unfortunately, our urban areas are going to continue to grow. Burlington, Winooski, the big cities, they're going to keep seeing student count go up. Rural communities like Sutton and others are going to keep seeing their count go down. We've lost literally half of our students in a number of our schools over the last 20 years. That's going to get worse in the next 20. So we really have to have the courage to put aside all of our emotion, all of our preconceptions, and be willing to have really creative dialogues about the change that's got to happen. And we've just got to face the fact that if we stick with the current administrative, archaic administrative structure that we've got, keep trying to run the same number of schools, keep having more staff than we had, frankly, when we had 30,000 more students in this state, our goose is cooked. Our goose is cooked.
Is it going to get to a point, though, where Vermont is going to be almost two Vermonts, where rural communities, there might even be rural communities where if you have a kid, that kid's got to go to school, 20, 25 miles away?
That's why it's really important this happen community by community. I mean, you can think of communities like, let's take Rochester, which is stuck up in the mountains,
yeah,
long drive wherever they go. So, you know, that's going to be a different solution than two communities that have cornfields between them and where, you know, travel's a lot easier. So, I mean, that's one example. But we can all think in our own communities of the inefficiencies of the current system. These aren't mysteries to local communities. What we haven't been willing to do is, first of all, Montpelier hasn't adequately partnered with local communities to give them the data they need to know what lies ahead. We just haven't. And the second piece is, the formula right now works against change. If you're literally sitting there funding students that don't exist in your school and giving incentives for really small schools to stay small, you're hurting kids.
Let me take Ryan from Danville. Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
Hi, pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. Go ahead. Got to be quick, please.
Yes, Governor. I sit on the couch beside a primary school teacher every night, and I just listen to her with all the input, the data input and everything that she has to do on all these kids. It seems like the thing that's left out of this whole conversation is just letting the teachers teach. They have to you know, the data that they have to put in and everything, and it's just all these people coming into the room, and she's excluded from, you know, meetings on her own kids that she teaches. It's like the teacher is like a second-rate citizen inside these schools, and it, I don't know, it's just, right. It's frustrating.
Well, you have the governor comment. Thank you for your call.
I hear the frustration, and I think that one of the things we should focus on is how we reduce paperwork and bureaucracy for teachers and staff so that they can do their job, which is teaching kids. One of the questions we should really look at is, what's our relationship between administrative pay, you know, folks that we're paying to run this inefficient system, and those that are in the classroom? I think we could put more resources into classroom teaching if we could have an honest conversation about all the money we're spending on bureaucrats.
Thank you for your time this morning. I appreciate it very much.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Governor Peter Shumlin joining us here live at the State House. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment.
Hi, folks. Wendell's is celebrating Martin Luther King Day as Vermont's largest.